are back in Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, current events, Catholic things. And when I say we're back, I mean we're starting the show. Yes. Welcome. How are you? Not sure that anybody really cares about North Carolina winning the title after, being the, not the Cinderella story, right? The opposite. But I think if it's anyone's team, well, I say not anyone, other than those North Carolina fans, which, congratulations. Not a sports guy, don't know anything about it, but I do love it when a Cinderella happens to get there, and we don't really see that frequently. Gonzaga with a very close opportunity and just not making it happen. So anyway, I always root for the underdog. Lots of things going on. Russia connection, what's happening? What's this Blackwater thing all about? We'll get into that. What is Senator John McCain saying about Syria, which apparently seems to be taking a turn, in his opinion, for the worse? Is this something that we need to take a closer look at? We'll get into that discussion. And the nuclear option for the Gorsuch nomination, what does this mean for Senate Republicans? Could there be an opportunity to squelch the filibuster and make sure that Gorsuch is a shoo-in? We'll talk about all of that and more. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour, culture, current events, Catholic things. We talk about that for 50 minutes every afternoon. Interesting things happening in the world. Always a new dynamic every day. And I guess the biggest news, or at least the latest news, is kind of what's happening with this Blackwater Eric Prince firm and Russia. I think that's something we seem to be digging into. Now, Betsy DeVos, the education secretary, is Prince's sister. Okay, so there's an interesting nepotistic connection. I think anytime you've got that, it thickens the plot. So there's obviously something to look at here a little more closely and try to figure out, is there something? But apparently, as it looks, Prince is in the United Arab Emirates, United Arab Emirates. He is living there. He has the security firm, Blackwater, and there apparently seems to be an orchestrated connection from the Emirates to Russia to the U.S. And Prince has kind of operated in an understanding that he was the unofficial envoy. Now, as it appears now, there's no direct connection to Trump in this, but what does this really mean ultimately in the grand scheme of all of this? I still don't know if we know. That's one of the interesting elements to this, is that, and I don't know that it's a Teflon coating necessarily, like we saw in Bill Clinton, everything that anyone tried to kind of pin on him, going back, oddly speaking of water, going back to Whitewater, right? He was in that real estate scam deal, that investment challenge that went sour, and that plagued him, but never really derailed him. It was kind of always hanging out. So from Whitewater to Blackwater now that we have with the Trump administration, but is there really a smoking gun? Or is this just grasping at straws? And I think we got to be fair in this question. I personally think it would be real easy as a candidate to say, hey, if this goes well, there's something in it for you, for anyone, right? I mean, that's kind of how we, I don't know. I mean, I've talked about Trump and deal making and reading his books and kind of knowing what he does. There's always that leverage of negotiation for anyone in a position where you may be holding some cards. And if you've got some cards to play, then why would you not play them? That's the nature of this type of equation. So to me, it's not surprising. I mean, I'm not saying it's crooked dealing or bad practice or anything. It's just, it's the nature of arrangements that if you're positioning yourself to have some sort of greater political influence, why you wouldn't try to rally the troops behind that potential influence even before it's real. So if you think you've got a crack at the presidency, and as soon as Trump was the nominee, he's got a crack at the presidency, why would you not begin kind of hedging your bets? To me, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm wrong and maybe that's unethical, but it seems kind of natural for anyone to do. I know it kind of sounds like I'm defending Trump. I'm just asking questions. I think we got to do that. We got to look at this. We got to say, is there something wrong? Has there been something wrong? Is this something that we really need to be concerned about? Or is it yet another tempest in a teapot? I don't know. I don't think any of us can say for sure yet what we're dealing with here. We've got this information now going back into the intelligence agencies looking at stuff that was happening at the tail end of the Obama administration, and Trump's team and perhaps even Trump himself is kind of caught in that crossfire. There's something that was going on with communications with those that were being surveilled and targeted. We know that. And so we got to ask, is it all just a kind of a bizarre place at a bizarre time? Is it wrong, or is it just interesting? Is it just an interesting place at an interesting time? Is it just a, peculiar place at a peculiar time, right? I mean, how do we boil this down? I don't know that we know. And I certainly understand, as crazy as it may sound, I understand Prince doing what he's doing, Eric Prince, in this situation of having a firm that could potentially benefit from a United Arab Emirates connection to Russia and the U.S. We're talking about an energy flow there, right? We're talking about, this is how you negotiate a deal that's going to be worth billions of dollars in crude oil. That's, I mean, come on. Is there anything else that could be about? That certainly seems to be what we're talking about here. And this is a guy that is like, oh, okay. He's got obvious connections on both sides, so why wouldn't he broker that? I think many of us, let's put it this way, finding ourselves in that dynamic, which few of us would ever. It's kind of a peculiar place at a peculiar time. This guy happens to have those connections, and he begins to broker this deal. Now, because of the questions about Russia and the connection to Trump, when that happened, where, and what appears to be some kind of cover-up, at least at the very least, something. I think we got to admit that. You can't have somebody say, I know Putin. I've never met Putin. I love Putin. I don't know the guy. Whatever. You can't have this kind of flip-flop of this and that-ness without it meaning something, right? Without it having some connection to some degree of smoking gun. I think we gotta look at that with the type of scrutiny that it requires. I think that's what we're doing now. Now again, if we unearth something here, then time will tell. And if we unearth something, what is it that we unearth? And then, is it treasonous? Was it just jumping the gun because you really couldn't be making those negotiations until you have the office? When did it happen? Was it before the election took place? Right? I mean, so these are where I think the minutiae of this is what we've got to get into and really determine. Was this some sort of nepotistic political favoritism that happened way, way, way before the fact and therefore really can't be managed effectively, right? It can't be considered anything ethical, or was it just a little bit of bad timing? I mean, really, isn't that timing is everything. When did this happen? Did it happen here or did it happen there? We got to examine that. And ethics of this situation really are going to be hinged upon when did this occur? And, you know, I mean, I have to believe in, I know I'm all over the map on where I stand on this, and I don't even really, at this point, I don't know. I think we're all just looking at it and examining it. I don't want Trump to go down in this, you know, fireball of impeachment because he's embroiled himself in something crooked. If he ended up in a situation where he naively jumped the gun, thinking that, well, I'm the president now, quote unquote, president elect, so I can start throwing the weight around, that's one thing. But if you were saying, okay, let's throw the election, right? Let's move it toward my advantage, and whatever you guys can do, because you've got the hacking technology and you've got the ability to get email addresses and expose individuals, whatever, right? I mean, that's kind of what we're dealing with here, and that's why it's so interesting. And there are those who are like, oh, Leo, it's fake news and blah, 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 blah. No, it's not. It's not. There's something that has happened. Something. What was it? What was the timing? How did it necessarily affect everything? And in the worst case scenario, it was early on, and it was orchestrated from the Trump side connecting to Russia, and yes, they had a hand in the election, which we think there was already something there, orchestrated here. If that comes down, that's a completely different dynamic than a president-elect thinking it can throw his weight around and then making calls to Russian authorities saying, hey, we're going to start working together and we're going to get this thing going, which Blackwater could be a portion of that. So there's, hey, come on, you kind of didn't need to do that just yet. And then there's, this is treasonous and criminal, right? I mean, that's where we are. And it all depends on when it happened and how it happened. Something happened. We know that. Something happened. Communication took place. Calls were made. Connections were made. Were favors promised? Who knows? We do know something happened. Now the question is, when and what exactly? That's what determines all of this in the grand scheme of ethics. So it's interesting. I think we've got to understand that. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, culture, current events, Catholic things, 50 minutes every afternoon. Thank you for joining us. Interesting when you look at this dynamic that seems to be happening with Trump's salary donation, right? He kind of had said he wouldn't take a salary. He's going to give it back to the government, now trying to say he wants to earmark this salary donation back to the park system, and specifically for the battlefields, historic battlefields, to preserve those historical markers and monuments. Now, there are those who say, well, it's a fine publicity stunt, but does it really mean anything when you're cutting the budget by so much drastic percentages that this donation back of this salary, which is close to $80,000 for 3 months, that's it's good work if you can get it, right? So most of us, yeah, that would be a significant chunk of change. But in this case, with the drastic cuts that are there, billions of dollars apparently for the program, this is one of those kind of too little too late situations, right? Like, it has to be a publicity stunt. Because if you really cared, you wouldn't cut the programs, right? Now, yeah, I think it, as with everything, kind of comes down to where your opinion is, which side of the political fence you're on, and if you see Donald Trump as inherently good, bad, or questionable. I really think that that's what it comes down to. It certainly appears as though his approval rating continues to stay tanked, whether or not something of this nature, even if it is a publicity stunt, is stunt enough to make a difference. Time will tell on that one. But he has been known to stunt, right? He has been known to be the guy that is going to do things to get attention and get press and get people going, oh, look at that guy, look what he's doing. Whether it's Miss Universe or WWE events, right? So we kind of got to understand who we're dealing with here. This isn't a governor from a state who's been raised up in politics and just simply has an ethic of saying, you know what, I got enough money. Let's find a way just to take my salary out of the budget, which, right, I mean, if it wasn't a publicity stunt, if you really were sincere about just saving the cash, you would just say, look, this line item is just going to be gone, right? We don't need to, then I don't need it. Let's just take it out. Well, wasn't it make more sense to pay you and then donate it? But no, why would I do that? If we draw attention to that? No, let's just look. Let's just do it. Take it out. I don't need that. I don't need a salary for this. In the new proposed budget, we budget me no salary. Okay? That's what we do. We propose that. Now we're talking about something that could at least be sincere. Something that is not going to potentially be accused of being a publicity stunt, and something that at least might begin to make a difference. When I say that, I mean at least in the hearts and minds of your detractors. Maybe. Maybe. Your detractors are generally your detractors, and you're never going to make them happy. That's something I think that is well worth understanding, regardless of what you do. But undoubtedly, there are ways of doing things with integrity and ways of doing things that kind of look slimy. And if you could find ways to do things with integrity, even if you're slimy, right? At least find the ways to look like you have integrity, even if you don't. Because otherwise, it's just going to be confirmed. Oh, yeah, I guess slimy. But in all of this, the big question is, what's really important? Do we need money for these programs? If that's the case, do we need to reexamine this budget? Do we need to look at the stuff that's getting cut? Because parks are getting cut. Arts are getting cut. I mean, parks and arts, these are a couple of my favorite things, right? I like to get out with the family, get out and enjoy nature, hike, camp. Not always is that done on a state or federal park, but sometimes it is. And, of course, art funding, I think, is important. I think it's something that we need to have in our culture to realize that there's importance to prove just how important it really is. We need to make sure that that stays preserved. That to me is of the utmost importance. Because when all we do is simply say, okay, defense spending, that's what it's about. We got to have that. And that's it. Essentially, that's the only place you're putting emphasis. We're going to get out of balance. Do we need to have defense? Yes. Do we need to have a strong military presence? Yes. I don't think we do away with that. I think there's a both-and approach. Yes, have that and have a artistic, cultural emphasis that says, look what's really important. You know, it's odd, George H.W. Bush getting all kinds of love these days from people who didn't love him before, because now he's kind of being seen for the more moderate conservative that he is and was, whatever. He was not a hardline right winger ever. He kind of seemed hawkish on the war stuff, but even by and large, you look at his political policies, they were not that extreme right. But what's interesting about W is that he has now taken up an art career, right? And he's got a book out there, and he's out there on the circuit, and he's promoting himself. And the interview that I happened to see was with Ellen DeGeneres, of all people, right? That you would never think these two would be together in the same room, much less having a conversation with each other that is respectful. Not only respectful, but they seem to be enjoying each other's company. It's pretty interesting to watch this. And there's W with his really amazing art. He's gifted. Now, he says he learned it from being bored and not having anything to do, so he decided to take up art, and he got an instructor, and they taught him well. But he's got these amazing pieces of art of military, wounded military, and portraits. It's stylistic. It's not, I guess it's expressionistic portrait work. But it's good. It's really good. And he has now decided that he's going to sell this book, and proceeds in the book go to help wounded warriors. It's a great thing. But it shows that we got to have an emphasis on art education, right? Because what was the hinge in that happening for him? He got an instructor. He got someone who knew what they were doing to help him along and say, okay, well, that's great. You get some raw talent, but try this. Now try that. Now do this. Now do that. See how this works when you do that, and look at this. See? That's how this works. That's how we do it. There's formulas to this stuff. But if we say, well, that's not important because defense is the only thing that's important and we're only going to do that, then we lose those opportunities for future generations to be inspired in that way and to have this education that can create the next George H.W., right? The artist. Not the president, the artist. So I really think that we got to put our priorities back in line. We've somehow got to see that, you know what, pendulum swing, yes, but let's keep the balance. Let's keep the balance, because that's where the stability comes from. A stable culture has all of that. Yes, we're strong defensively. We're not going to be weak. We're not going to let anybody walk on us. We're going to make sure that that's taken care of. But at the same time, we're going to do everything in our power to ensure that we've got real opportunity for those who want the opportunity. So we somehow have to manage this in a way that says we're we got the right priorities on the right things. And we're not just doing something out of publicity. We're not just doing something to try to get attention to say, yeah, see, look how cool I am. I mean, I don't know. I think George H.W. is pretty cool. Maybe it's publicity. But it seems like he's getting publicity for doing the right things, which I appreciate. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this. Back, I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, culture, current events, Catholic things. We talk about that for 50 minutes every afternoon. So I posted over on my Facebook page a story from NPR regarding the deportation of American students. These who are born in the USA, just like Bruce Springsteen, students who are now deported to Mexico. And essentially, American English-speaking kids, because their families were deported, their parents were deported because they were here illegally, they're there now trying to settle in. And a friend of mine said the one child was concerned about having to move and make new friends and all the things that the kids have to deal with when they do things of that nature. But apparently now they're saying that they're happy there because they have made new friends. But in all of this, I think we got a challenge that says there are kids who are on their way potentially to being incredibly productive American citizens, and because of being caught in this challenge of deportation, that's never going to be an opportunity for them. Or maybe it could be. I don't know. Do they hold dual citizenship? Could they come back as adults because they were actually born in the U.S. and not be illegal immigrants? That's another question. But I think the one thing that we don't think about, or we certainly don't address in these conversations, is what do we do with our American citizenry? Because we are a country that is diminishing. We're not a country that's busting at the seams. We're not a country that is booming from new births. Certainly not of white Americans. Certainly not of quote-unquote Americans as we think of them. So I think it bears a pretty serious question of what do you do, right? What do you do next? How do you take this country to the next incarnation? Because it's not just going to happen automatically, not with where we are now with our policies. So if there is the opportunity to educate kids in American schools, regardless of where they're from, teaching them to be productive Americans, taxpaying Americans, working Americans, entrepreneurial Americans, whatever, there's benefit to that. A government should be able to see simply that might be something we want to consider, right? But I think we're generally pretty short-sighted. And I think especially administrations, not always, but I think this administration is saying, what can I get done in 4 years, right? This might be all the time I got. What can I do? Let's do it. Let's get it done. But the deportations, I mean, those happened under the Obama administration, the vast majority of the step up. And nobody talks about that either, that, my goodness, you know, the Obama administration was deporting like crazy. I mean, that was part of their policy on immigration. We haven't had, in my opinion, adequate immigration reform that matches the ethic of the Catholic faith ever. We just haven't had it. waiting to see that happen. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. No signs of that, at least. Speaking of something not happening anytime soon, that seems to be the challenge with Syria. Now Senator John McCain is saying this is crazy. If we're simply going to let Syrians have to fend for themselves, which is essentially what has been said by this administration, and now entering some sort of pact with Russia, who has been on the government, this pro-government Syrian side with Assad, now what do you do? Now, you could say there's the problem of ISIS. We've all got to at least find that common enemy, and maybe there's something to that. And if that's what's happening here, if that's the underlying concern and result, then great. But if we're going to simply say Syrians are, you're just kind of sorry about your luck, we have the means to help you, we simply won't, that's a problem. You know, that's something we got to think about. And Senator John McCain, who knows a thing about being left out there alone as a prisoner of war, feeling like, and maybe assuming that you've lost hope because nobody cares about you. Guy's got some cred, right? He's got some cred. Now, of course, he was called a loser by Donald Trump because he got captured and then he lost a presidential election. So who's this guy, right? What kind of credibility does he have, right? Crazy. But I will say this. I think that Syria, over the next few years, is going to be one of the kind of litmus tests of this administration. What are we really doing? How effective can we be at combating this challenge, and what can we do to maybe make life better for the Syrians? I don't know that we're going to do that. We might make life better for Assad and Putin and Trump, right? There might be some sort of unholy alliance there. I don't know. And I'm not pretending to be an expert on this. All I know is that there are women, children, innocents, individuals who are in harm's way, who get just constant crossfire, and not even crossfire. In some cases, it's direct attack on these individuals. I think there's question right now as far as whether the American-led attacks have done more harm than good when it comes to civilians. I don't know that we really know. I don't know how accurate those numbers are to know for sure. But I admire Senator John McCain. I voted for him as president. Didn't happen. I personally think his choice for VP was not the best, right? Sarah Palin, yeah, as governor of Alaska, I thought she did a fine job. I really did. But I think she kind of got in a little bit over her head as a VP when it came to understanding the bigger picture well enough to articulate it intelligently and build the support and the bipartisan or the moderate support, let's put it that way. There are those who are afraid of her because they thought, well, McCain, he's no spring chicken, and this is his VP, and she could be running the country, right? My assumption. I know I kind of felt that way, and I still voted for him because I believed in him. Palin, again, I thought was interesting, but man, she was polarizing. She was just incredibly polarizing. McCain, not a polarizing figure. If he would have chosen a VP that probably had a little bit more moderate appeal, then maybe a different outcome. Who knows? But I do believe he's to be respected. I do believe he knows a thing or two about these types of situations. He's been in war. He's been a prisoner of war. He knows what it feels like to be abandoned. Again, maybe we should listen to him. maybe he's a senior statesman who has an opinion worth listening to. And I know he's a maverick, right? That's what we said about him when he ran for president. He doesn't take a party line approach. I believe McCain takes an ethical approach. I think he takes an approach that says, we're going to look at this from a true humanitarian standpoint. We're going to try to find the best solution. This is what I've seen in him. And it's also the reason why I say there's something good about career politicians. People hate that when I say that. Oh, Leo, career politicians, that's the worst. Really? They might know what they're doing. What if we elected a doctor? What if every 4 years you get a different doctor? And it was because all the patients wanted the guy who was most popular. Well, yeah, this guy's never doctored before, but I tell you what, he can make an amazing steak, right? He is really good at on the grill. Wow, you know? He's done that for a while. He knows his stuff. So let's put him over here doctoring. Is that what we want? Do we want someone with absolutely no experience? Tremendous experience in something else that may not translate. I mean, yeah, he might slice up some meat occasionally, but is he doing anything that's doctoring? Yeah, he might put some spices together in the kitchen, but is he healing anyone who's not well? That's how I see it. And I know that's not a popular position. I want kids who are crazy about politics to start when they're kids. And through college, study politics. And out of college, get into public service. Get on a council. Get into a mayorship as a kid. Work your way up. Become a governor, a senator, a congressman, whatever. Get to the presidency with this long, long, long career of me going, well, yeah, Kind of know what they're doing by now. To not bring the guy in here who's never done anything remotely of this nature. Look at somebody who's had the right trajectory toward this position that says, yes, this guy can do it. Or girl, whomever, they can do it. That's all we have time for this afternoon. Thank you for listening. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. God bless.